And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, October 9th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody, TGIF.
Yes, it is. And I just want to remind the listeners, because it is TGIF, I do cut out a little early on Fridays to finish up the paperwork for the week. And I appreciate Dave finishing out the last segment of the program. So let's get started right away. A great day for gold today. We had almost a 2%. Well, earlier in the day, it was 2% increase in gold. Right now in the New York spot price aftermarket, we're looking at $34.60, $1,929. Silver was up a little over 5% today, $1.23 at $25.18. Platinum was up $27 at $895. Palladium was up 3%, $75 at $2,503. Now, again, we have pressure on the dollar today, down 0.54, 93.05. A little bit of a pullback today in oil, 67 cents at 40.52. And the paper markets today, we're showing some strength in all of the markets. The Dow was up 161 points, 28,586. The NASDAQ was up 158, 11,579. That's 158. The S&P was up 30 at 3,478. 10-year yield, 0.01 at 0.08% on the 10-year yield. And that is pretty much what's going on today, and we're going to talk about some of the things that perhaps, you know, it's any and all of the things that we talk about on this program that affects the markets. Either they do or they don't. We just live in that period of time. You know, everyone's trying to find some sort of a, you know, a path, a trend, or something to, you know, when something doesn't go in the right direction of what they think that it should go, then, you know, there's something wrong. But I think these markets are just as chaotic as everything else that we're experiencing in our politics and our economy and, you know, across this nation as a whole. So it's a reflection of that. And, you know, again, you know, I mentioned it yesterday when we talked about the stimulus. It was on again, off again, on again. And I guess it's on again, Dave. And maybe a little bit broader, too. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and Speaker Nancy Pelosi reported some progress yesterday. The White House today said it will take $1.8 trillion offer to Democrats as the sides work to strike a deal before the November 3rd election. The plan would mark a $200 billion increase from the $1.6 trillion that the administration had previously proposed. And again, this is just all, you know, negotiating stuff. They'll settle on something. And, you know, Kudlow, my BFF, Larry, said the president had approved a revised package ahead of another planned discussion between Mnuchin and Pelosi, and Trump had urged negotiators to go big. You would think they would, you know, perhaps go back to the 3.4 with that comment. But so again, we'll see where it all ends up, Dave.
Well, we will. I mean, the head party pooper in this case, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell did say that another stimulus package in the next 3 weeks is unlikely. And that came after the president said on the Rush Limbaugh show that he'd like to see a bigger package than either party is offering. So, you know, mixed signals galore, Melody, in a week with on again, off again, on again, off again, and now on again talks. But here's the thing, and the key here is, and remember that these talks are been primarily between Mnuchin and Pelosi, but any bill has to get through the Senate, and with McConnell very reluctant to take the focus off of the upcoming confirmation hearings for Amy Cohen Barrett for the Supreme Court, I think it's going to take a lot of arm twisting from the White House and perhaps some fellow Republicans in the Senate, particularly the handful that are in extremely tight races for re-election. So, again, action in the next 3 weeks unlikely, but as you mentioned, Melody, we shall see.
If the stock market breaks down in the next 3 weeks, we will have that before the next. I mean, that's what I truly believe, because it isn't about the people out there. And they just use the people as,
pawns
for their elections, to make people think that they're really fighting for them. But, and instead of really addressing the problems and, why people can't find, why we can't find jobs, why these, I mean, everywhere I go, I see job signs, people, businesses are trying to hire. So there's a reason why people aren't working. They're there to be had. So, I mean, it's just,
is a lot of them are just at $10, $12, maybe $15 an hour. A lot of folks who've been laid off so far, furloughed, were making, in many cases twice that amount or even more. So it's the really better paying jobs that they're not seeing. But you're right, at the lower end, there are plenty of them. A lot of them aren't being filled.
But if the one of the hardest hit industries was the restaurant and service.
Right.
I mean, they all get paid the same. I mean, it's not like they're middle management or anything. So, so it makes you think, well, if that was the hardest hit industry, why would you have these still all of these signs for leisure and hospitality open and so forth? And I don't know. These are just questions, that's beyond my pay grade, but it's I'm curious. And again, it's all these mixed messages and mixed numbers that we get to where a lot of them just doesn't seem to make sense. If you're trying to string these things together and connect the dots, it's like, these dots aren't making a picture. So it's, and you've had their excess monies. I don't know, Dave, when I was young, if I had to work two jobs to survive, I did. And, and then I went to school in the meantime or, whatever, until something did come along. I mean, you just didn't work.
A full-time college student, worked the dining halls at lunch and dinner, and then went to the local hotel. Typically work the night shift or graveyard shift. So I still look back decades later and say that night job was the reason I missed so many of those 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock classes.
Mm-hmm. Sure, Dave. That's what you told your parents.
Oh, I know.
But we know better.
They didn't believe me either.
Oh, okay. Today, almost, let me see here, and again, they'll use the stimulus as, needed for the long-term unemployed and without really tackling the real problem. Some economists' projections show long-term unemployment peaking in early 2021. In April, for the first time since 2001, fewer than 1 million people were unemployed for more than 6 months. That same month, with the surge of layoffs from the pandemic, that peaked at an unprecedented level. Today, almost 1.5 million of those laid off workers are still unemployed, and the ranks of the long-term jobless, of course, are rising at a rate not seen since the financial crisis. And the biggest, as we mentioned, the biggest job losses were in the leisure and hospitality. And the food services industry is down 2.3 million jobs. 2.3 million jobs.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Those same economists are, again, still insisting that without new stimulus, you know, the increased joblessness could rise to a level that, you know, would nearly equal or even equal, if not surpass, the Great Recession. One economist sounds like one with empathy. I know lots of people in this boat, and it's hard, and it means they can't do other things that are helpful to the economy, like pay rent or buy things, and it means they have to rely on family and friends to get through, and it's a drag on the recovery. Well, depending on the speed of any recovery, it's likely to reach almost 4 million people at best, 5.1 million in a worst-case scenario. We think that's wishful thinking, particularly if you count the millions of discouraged Americans who've just stopped looking for a job. One who sees it more like us in this case, Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, he sees a peak of 5 million long-term employed as a baseline scenario, not as the worst case. He warns that if stimulus talks break, well, they are broken down, but don't get resolved, if there's not a new stimulus package, he thinks that number, 5 million, could double. Now, in normal times, the longer you're out of work, the harder it is to find a new job. Whether it's in the same type of job classification, but particularly in a new one. Employers just don't like to hire people with large gaps in their resume or whose skill they perceive might be outdated or a little rusty. And that's especially so for those with graying hair and those who they think are probably 55 years old and older. You know, on the other side, there are another almost 5 million Americans who are just weeks away from being considered long-term unemployed. And more than a million have filed initial jobless claims every week for the past 6 months. I don't know, Melody. It looks like we're in for a lot of continuing uncertainty, if you ask me.
I agree, and wait until these numbers really start to where they really have some credibility, too.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, and right now there's just too many miscalculations coming from too many different directions. And we're going to talk here a little bit, I mean, in California. You know, we're already talking about unemployment, Dave. More than 25.5 million people were collecting unemployment benefits as of mid-September. And the government... And the government says nearly 1.3 million people filed first-time jobless claims last week. 1.3. 800,000 for traditional unemployment and 464,000 for the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. And what's telling is this is 1.3 million number excludes any new claims from California, the largest state in the country. And they paused its program to implement fraud prevention technology and comb through a backlog of claims that had reached nearly 600,000. I mean, and it's still growing by 10,000 a day. No wonder people are leaving California.
That's insane.
I mean, what a time to implement fraud prevention technology. I mean, come on. I mean, your timing kind of stinks.
Yeah.
You know, an economist, Tim Day, he's out of the University of Oregon. He said that we should be more skeptical about the initial claims data. The claims data lets you view the current environment as a repeat of the last recovery. If the claims data is deeply corrupted, the conventional wisdom is just plain wrong. This isn't the 2007-09 recession or the 2009-2020 recovery. It really is something different. And again, it's just another signal that things aren't necessarily what we're being told they are. You know, and here, you know, we periodically talk about the farmers. Well, the dairy farmers could see another price hit this year as you have government purchases are slowing down, plus the reduced demand from schools. So you want to know what filters down, ladies and gentlemen? This is the stuff that filters down. Dairy products have gotten a boost from the Department of Agriculture's Farmers to Families Food Box Program, which includes plans to buy as much as $4 billion worth of food to distribute to those in need. The government purchases have helped to send milk prices on a tear recently, but the program, it is slated to wind down. And concerns are rising over whether that rally is going to be sustainable. You know, these milk markets have already been on a roller coaster year. When lockdowns went into place, dairy markets were among the hardest hit in the food world. I mean, doesn't people remember watching the spigots of milk being emptied? You know, consumers and Americans, we do eat a lot more cheese and butter when we're dining out than we do at home. As restaurants shuttered, farmers were left with an overwhelming glut. Again, millions of pounds of milk got dumped. But government stepped in and helped rescue prices. And in addition to the United States Food Program and a dairy bailout as a result of the trade war with China, the EU and Australia also earmarked funds for the industry. So we saw milk futures in Chicago soar after it touched a decade low in April, but now we could see that reverse again. U.S. government dairy purchases are set to dwindle by year's end, dropping to 8 million pounds, almost 8 million pounds by December, from 506 million pounds in September. Amazing. Hey, we'll be right back. That went by fast. We're heading into the first break of the program. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. We will find you acting on your best
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And I got a phone call today, Dave, from Greg Hunter. We talked about this yesterday. He called me. He says, you know, I've been getting calls on this about this article about the U.S. Mint. And he says, I know if anybody knows the answer, you do.
Yes, no.
I do. And he says, is it true that the U.S. Mint is charging $67 for a silver eagle? He says, well, not really. Not what we buy. That's their specialty silver eagle. It's going to have a mint mark of the West Point. And they do market silver eagles where they do charge those prices. But usually there's limits on them. I don't know if they're going to strike it a little bit differently. The West Point is where the proof coins are minted. And this is where this coin that they're charging $67 for is going to be minted. So it might be struck a little bit differently. But what we buy for investment, the bullion uncirculated, no. It's still spot plus wholesale plus retail. You're not going to be paying $67 for a silver eagle until silver gets to $60. Maybe 55, maybe 60, but you're not going to pay that until spot price gets to that level. And so, very misleading the way that article was reported. And, you know, you could, to some degree, maybe see some inflation saying, well, yeah, it's going from, what, 54 to 67. That's a lot of inflation there. But we don't know where they initially set that price when it was 54. Was silver 18? Was it 16? So we don't know where the $54 was initially priced at. So, yes, I do believe costs have risen. We see supply chains disrupted in many industries that are available. So, yes, you could have disruptions and they would, absolutely, a little bit of inflation could be there. But there's a lot of factors, and that's what you have to keep in mind. And I do appreciate those who called me and asked me about this article. And that's so we can share the information. And, of course, when I was finished with my conversation with Greg Hunter, I asked him if he would be on next week's program. He said he would, so he'll be joining us sometime next week. So, with that said, 1-800-375-4188. We have silver eagles under $30, so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we were talking about dairy farmers could face another hit this year. And, you know, we saw that the government stepped in and tried to help them out. But I think it's worth repeating, because I asked Dave during the break, is it dropping? Are the U.S. government dairy purchases, are they dropping by 8 million pounds or to 8 million pounds? And he says, no, it's reported dropping to 8 million pounds by December from 506 million pounds in September. So, I mean, that's an incredible drop. Just, it's mind-boggling, Dave.
It sure is.
Prices are going to fall again to try to slow down overall milk production and get it lined up where with where real commercial demand is at the same time. As we mentioned, schools have gone virtual at least part of the time. So again, that means a lot fewer milk cartons and lunchtime pizza, grilled cheese sandwiches, and other typical meals are going to be fewer. So demand from schools typically represent about 6% of the market. So, you know, declining fluid milk demand is the biggest impact from students not completely returning to school, and certainly very bearish for the industry. So, amazing. What's next, Dave?
Well, we talked off and on about millennials and their impact on and piece of the economy, and now we see at least through the first half of this year that millennials own less than 5% of wealth in the U.S. Now, despite making up the largest portion of the workforce, Fed figures say that millennials have just 4.6% of U.S. wealth. Now, contrast that to baby boomers, who control over half of the country's wealth at 53%, while Generation X accounts for about 25%. Seniors of our country, the silent generation, holds about 17%. Now, while the Fed says it's not abnormal for older generations to be wealthier than younger ones, I mean, after all, they've had longer to earn money and, you know, watch their gold and silver assets grow, the Fed's data also show that millennials have far less wealth than boomers did at the same age. Take 1989, when baby boomers were around the same age as millennials are on average today, boomers controlled 21% of the nation's wealth. That's almost five times as what millennials own today, Melody.
Wow, that really is interesting. Many previous reports, Dave, have found that millennials are on average worse off financially. Not better, worse, at the same age. And most likely better educated. And so millennial workers, as well as women and people of color, make up a disproportionate share of these workforces. Millennials have largely missed out of the gains made in the stock market over the past couple months. They own just 2% of total equity in corporations and mutual fund shares. So, and I can't imagine that they own any gold and silver. And that's sad that they haven't been educated well enough. As much education as they have, they don't educate them about real money and what real money is. So, cash.
We do.
We educate. But how many listeners out there are millennials? Probably not many.
Talk to your children and grandchildren, ladies and gentlemen. Spread the word, the good news, as it were.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I think with the chaos that we're experiencing, this huge division, and that's continuing, I think the youth of today are almost more open to listen. I mean, when things are just going along, you know, smoothly, and, you know, there's no, you know, they just ignore everything, they don't pay any attention to anything, and they just go on and, you know, so forth. So if you had to pick something good from all this chaos, maybe that is it. I had an interesting conversation with a younger person this week, and I was really surprised that the amount of thought in various subjects that had you know, it just surprised me the amount of thought and analysis of what's going on. So it just surprised me. So that's what brought me to this conclusion. Now talk to them. You have to talk to them.
It's an ideal time, as you suggested, Melody. I mean, millennials have been driving a lot of talk over the last few years about changing the way big business does business, democratizing boards of directors and giving shareholders more say, et cetera, et cetera. Well, in terms of, you know, the overall dynamic of finances and investing, wow, with all those concerns about, you know, mainstream typical investing, here it is, here we are, millennials. I guess we just have to figure out how to get the word out to you. Because I think gold and silver, in many respects, represents the kind of change that you seek. And in terms of a long-term, safe investment, one that happens to be primed for explosive growth on top of what we've seen this year especially, but over the past few years. Boy, what a wonderful opportunity to get in at a time where you can see your assets grow and really not have to look at it every day and worry about huge gyrations. Sure, you know, there are going to be the ups and downs in the precious metal markets, as Melody talks about all the time. But boy, over the long haul, your risk-adjusted reward is so worth your spending some time. And, well, once you have the money to invest, look for us.
Yes, and I mean, it is. So I think they are open to listen. Speaking of cash, how about corporations? They're filling up on corporate balance sheets, swelling their rainy day funds. I hope you have a rainy day fund, but theirs is to an unprecedented $2 trillion. While analysts have a million ways to spend it, the market's preference is clear. Just say no. Doing so has been bad for your stock. Companies laying out the most for share repurchases and capital investments have trailed the S&P since its March low. And it's sometimes it can be a concern when you have that kind of cash just sitting there idle, especially when you have a nation that's trying to pull out of a recession and when there are so many uncertainties that we face. So Goldman Sachs basket of big capital spenders, it's fallen almost 7% this year. So anything you'd like to add to that, Dave?
No, not really. I mean, their companies in the S&P 500 did slash their share repurchases by almost half during the second quarter to an 8-year low, while their capital spending dropped 15%. We know that anemic spending is often self-fulfilling when it comes to the impact on growth, whether it's corporate or consumer. The economy is sluggish as it is. Companies certainly are more reluctant right now to use their cash, and that's starving the economy of much needed fuel. So we'll see what happens. Let's hope that if and when it gets better, it's a big question mark that remains right now. Will these big corporations return to their old dubious ways?
Well, you know, we talk about different industries, and we talk about the hardest hit industries, you know, service, restaurants, leisure, hospitality. But here's a little segment of that area, coffee shops. You know, you see, you know, your big chain coffee shops. I mean, they're actually expanding their grip on America's coffee culture. as your little independent shops are just trying to struggle to survive. The number of coffee shops in the U.S. is shrinking for the first time in a decade as sales plunge. So you're seeing, and that's only going to help the big chains, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, and, even McDonald's gain ground at the expense of these independent outlets fighting to keep their doors open. We've seen closures have happened already. Winter will bring another wave because a lot of these little coffee shops depend on outdoor seating or even some walk-up foot traffic. Fewer coffee shops mean thousands have lost jobs. Again, it's going to add to the unemployment surge. The shift may also curb demand from specialty coffee producers around the world, since cafe patrons tend to drink a little more premium beverage made from the higher grade beans. So the U.S. will have roughly 25,000 outlets specializing in coffee or tea by the end of 2020, and that is down 7% from a year earlier, and the first decline since coming out of the Great Recession of 2011. Annual sales are going to plunge an estimated 12%. This is a staggering number, $24 billion, almost $25 billion.
I know. The 25,000 outlets made me do a double take.
Yes.
Americans, and it's not just Americans, Europeans, I guess people the world over, but boy, we love our coffee and tea, don't we?
We do.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave?
No, I don't think so.
And these little shops, they need to be creative. I went to a little town, Snow Hill. It's a county seat in this county that I live in. Last Saturday, stopped for a cup of coffee. They had a little coffee shop, but they only had one little outside table.
Oh.
And it's like, well, couldn't you get two or three? And again, I don't know if that's the city, limits, regulations and so forth. And if it's a city, that's preventing them to put out, only one coffee table, then shame on them, because they're not helping the businesses in that little community survive by restricting. There are things that these little shops can do if, again, it takes money and so forth to do so. But, it's just sad to see all these little mom and shops close. But we're closing for this segment, and we'll be back for the third segment. I'll be gone. Dave will be here. So thank you, Dave, and I'll be back on Monday.
Bye, Melody.
Tell me again tonight. Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back one more time to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's spending the final segment in the office, taking care of paperwork to end the week. Now, to start off this segment, here's an off-the-wall story. I know we've been fairly seriously minded with news in the first two segments, but here's a piece that I suspect would usually make its way into our weekly Levity is Golden segment, but since this week's segment was already on Wednesday's program, I guess this one's just going to have to stand on its own merits. But briefly, venture capital investors are pouring money into Yinsect, Y-N-S-E-C-T. That's a startup in France that is going to breed, listen to this, mealworms to feed fish and pets. Yes, I just said it will breed worms, a public company. A total of $224 million of newly pledged funds will bring the company's funding to $372 million, one of the largest rounds for an insect farming startup. Gosh, this wouldn't be the only one, it sounds like. Investors include Belgium's Astenor Ventures, LA-based Upfront Ventures, and Footprint Coalition. That's an investment group founded by Iron Man star Robert Downey Jr. The money will go into building one of the world's biggest insect farms in northern France and expand operations to North America and Asia. Now, it turns out that insects are emerging as a long-term solution to a number of problems. Using a fraction of land, they turn food waste into feed and offer an alternative source of protein. In fish farming, they're starting to displace fish meal made from wild-caught fish. One researcher expects the global insect market to exceed $4.1 billion in the next 5 years. That's up from $473 million this year. Well, as fascinating as that investment may sound, ladies and gentlemen, for all you fishermen and fisherwomen out there, Melody and I would nevertheless still recommend boring old gold and silver as a sounder and cleaner investment. Our latest blog, which will be out right after today's show, is about the struggles of Americans wading through this historic pandemic. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and newsletters at dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page at dgscoins. Nearly 60 million Americans expect someone in their household will lose a job or take a pay cut in the next 4 weeks, according to survey results released the other day by the Census Bureau. Households headed by people of color in particular are continuing to struggle economically from the pandemic, according to the survey that ended about 2 weeks ago. The Census Bureau's latest edition of its Household Pulse survey found that more than 27% of Americans in their prime working years, that's 25 to 54, anticipate income losses affecting themselves or someone they live with during this month. Now, if there's a silver lining in the survey, the latest review showed a slight reduction in the number of Americans worried about potential income losses. During the prior survey period conducted earlier last month, 62.3 million people said they were concerned. Now, Minneapolis Fed President Neil Kashkari said earlier this week that more fiscal support was urgently needed to support the economy. He said, whatever Congress can do with the executive branch, come together aggressively to put money in the hands of people who've lost their jobs and to support small businesses so that we don't have this continuing wave of bankruptcies across the economy. It's just vital that they move quickly. And that was Kashkari. His comments were similar to those of Fed Chair Jerome Powell this week when he made one of his strongest appeals to date on the need for lawmakers to do more. Now, the latest census survey found that about 32% of Americans found the paying for typical household expenses to be either somewhat or very difficult. Boy, that's a lot of people. The survey also showed about 20% of households struggling to cover their costs of living are relying on credit cards, while half, I'll say that again, half are borrowing from family members or friends. Now, once again, surveys like this suggest it's easy to think the economy is on the rebound if you're lucky enough to be gainfully employed, especially if you haven't been furloughed during this year's crisis. Now, again, be on the lookout in your email boxes for this week's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog right after today's show. Now, sales of both investment-grade and high-yield corporate debt hit full-year records in the third quarter in a race to capitalize on Fed support that actually may know some limits. But PIMCO Global Economic Advisor Joaquin Fell says that investors should know that policymakers, be they on the Fed or in Congress or the White House, can't shield them from losses if a pandemic-fueled corporate borrowing spree spurs a surge in defaults. Fell said in his firm's October Outlook, central banks cannot protect investors from defaults and capital impairment. After all, despite investors' enthusiasm for the Fed's backstop stimulus, which admittedly has helped drive spreads sharply tighter over recent months, the Fed just hasn't proven as ready as some might have hoped to leap into the fray at the first sign of a shakeout. We know that the Fed kept to the sidelines as spread widened at the end of just last month. According to Jefferies economists Anita Markowska and Thomas Simons, despite being a major milestone when it was first announced, the Fed's corporate credit program has not had to do much heavy lifting in terms of actually purchasing bonds. Now, this isn't news for the many investors whose appetite for corporate credit appears to have soured over the past month. In September, investors pulled cash out of ETFs that track corporate bonds for the first time since the pandemic first upended markets in late February. And we're talking about investment-grade bonds there, too. But again, just as we talked about with these worms, if you really want to play it safe, forget about the corporate bonds, especially the high-yield bonds, which have already seen unprecedented defaults this year. Put your cash in the only real safe havens out there, ladies and gentlemen, gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. If we're on the phone with another customer or if it's after business hours, you can be sure that we'll get back to you as early as we can the next business day. Now, let's see. There are a couple of articles here that we can talk about to finish up the week. Now, federal regulators are rapidly becoming bigger dark pools of information than those secretive stock exchanges run by the big boys, the big banks on Wall Street. The other week, we featured a series in our American Survival newsletter and our blog about rampant money laundering in Deutsche Bank and the recent conviction of two of their former traders on criminal charges of manipulating gold and silver prices. Now, on September 29th, the Justice Department issued a press release. Now, this is a press release, not the usual press conference, announcing the fourth and fifth felony counts against J.P. Morgan Chase in the past 6 years. The bank admitted to the charges and was put on three-year probation, its third such probation in 6 years. Bank chair, CEO, and good old boy Jamie Dimon, who has presided over all five of those felony counts, was left in place at the bank once again. And now, just the other day, when all eyes were on the vice presidential debate, the Fed and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency announced consent decrees with Citigroup, who, as you probably know, is the third largest bank in the U.S. The OCC imposed a $400 million fine on Citigroup's federally insured commercial bank, Citibank, and stated in its order that it had, and I'm quoting here, identified unsafe or unsound practices with respect to the bank's internal controls, including, among other things, an absence of clearly defined roles and responsibilities and non-compliance with multiple laws and regulations. Now, the term non-compliance with multiple laws and regulations, of course, means the bank had broken multiple laws and regulations. But apparently, the laws it broke, how it broke them, and who benefited and by how much, is just too explosive a story to see the light of day. I guess it's just too serious for us consuming Americans to know. Now, the consent orders from both the OCC and the Fed failed to specify exactly what crimes Citigroup had committed and instead used vague generalities such as unsafe or unsound practices. Ooh. The Fed's order did include two deficiencies that jumped off the page: capital planning and liquidity risk management, again, without being more specific. But problems with capital and liquidity aren't something one wants to read about, Citigroup especially, in 2020, because Citigroup's the same bank that became insolvent and received the largest taxpayer bailout in global banking history during the Great Recession. The bank has obviously done something very bad because the OCC has put it on a very tight leash, which is usually done only in extreme circumstances. The OCC order requires that, and I'm again quoting, with the exception of ordinary course transactions such as hedging, market making, and securitization transactions, the bank shall not complete any new portfolio or business acquisitions until it has received prior written determination of no supervisory objection to the review process from the deputy comptroller. Now, what that means is that Citibank can't open new retail bank branches, it can't acquire other banks, and it can't increase its already massive derivatives book, other than hedging, without the advance written approval of the OCC. Now, besides the prospect of money laundering or manipulating the prices of derivatives it's a party to, the charges raise the question, has Citigroup done something illegal regarding the tens of billions of dollars it's spent buying back its own stock? Beginning with the second quarter of 2015, Citigroup's been spending billions of dollars in buybacks a quarter. And in July, just this past July, we learned that Citigroup has been paying out more than it earned for years, and it now has $102+ billion in debt maturing within the next 3 years. In June, the Fed quietly reimbursed Citibank $3.1 billion. Under its Paycheck Protection Program Liquidity Facility, the PPP, of course, the program that reimburses banks for loans they made under the CARES Act program, which, of course, those loans are guaranteed by the Small Business Administration. Now, what's wrong with that? Do you hear an oxymoron there? Small Business Association? Citibank? Come on, that's outrageous. Now, as of the Fed's mid-August PPP report, no other too-big-to-fail bank had asked to be reimbursed by the Fed, just Citibank, raising further questions about its liquidity risk management. There's no better proof that things are completely out of control now at the Fed than the fact that Fed Chair Jerome Powell has had the audacity to tell the American people repeatedly that the big banks have been, quote, a source of strength during the current crisis. Now, how could that possibly be true when the largest bank in the country, J.P. Morgan Chase, was charged with two more felony counts just last month for turning its precious metals desk into a racketeering enterprise and rigging the U.S. Treasury market? And just yesterday, Citigroup, the third largest bank in the U.S., was said to be operating in this unsafe or unsound manner. And of course, let's not forget that Goldman Sachs paid $3.9 billion in July to settle a bribery and kickback scandal with Malaysia over its sovereign wealth fund, 1MDB. It sure doesn't sound like the banking industry is operating from a source of strength, ladies and gentlemen. Power, perhaps, but strength, no. Hey, I hear that music. We're heading into a weekend. Thank you so much for tuning into today's show. Melody and I will be back on Monday. I'm Dave Allen. Have a good weekend. Be safe and go gold. Bye-bye.
Have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man.